tons of discussions about this on the list. So Francois sent a summary not long ago so that people could be on the same page, actually. So if you want to, you know, read that on the list, it's available as well. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll cover both the 4244 BIS as well as the target URI documents. Okay, so what has happened since last meeting, since ITF-74? We've had a bunch of revisions of these documents, so that's what I show in there. So we got quite a few for the 4244 BIS. And we've also added some authors. So some the authors of the target delivery URI are now authors of the 4244 BIS document. In the case of the target URI document, we've had a few minor revisions, and then we basically stopped because basically we were fixing 4244 instead, and we'll get to that later. So the focus is really on 4244, so don't spend too much time on the target URI document because it's not aligned right now because we stopped working on it for now. So what we would like to achieve today is a few things. So maybe agree on a few of the remaining technical issues, but I don't want to rat hole on anything, so we may bring some of them to the list if it's too technical. I don't think any of the remaining technical issues are really that big at this point, but if we can have some sort of agreement on some of them, that may be helpful. What we would really want to do is to move 4244 BIS to a working group document. Currently, it's an individual draft, if we can do that. And finally, decide what we'll do with the target URI document. We basically have two options. One of them is to keep it as a separate document for the use case of target URI, and then it would refer back to the 4244 BIS, which has all the normative and the technical information about how to use that to do that. The other option would be to roll it into 4244 BIS. There's an appendix with a bunch of use cases, and we just add one for the target URI scenarios, plural. I think we want to recommend the second one, but we don't really have a strong preference. So we'll get back to the slide at the end to go through this. This is the main thing. So what is the scope of 4244 BIS in the case of... there's really two main things in 4244. So the first one is to enable target URI, enable the requirement of target URI. So that's the big addition, I would say, to 4244 BIS. And the other thing that's in scope for 4244 BIS is actually fixing it so that it actually works for the things that it was designed to do, because there's a bunch of issues with it dealing with interop. And specifically, what that means is to allow distinguishing retargeting from routing. Wait a second, Neil. And there's other SDOs that are dependent on this, obviously. And we have had quite a bunch of experience over the years now with History Info to get a pretty good idea of what's missing. So this is really to allow for interoperability. And finally, as anything that we do here, we want to make sure this is backward compatible. Dean?
Dean Willis, sir. So a question on the scope of 4244 BIS. Mm-hmm. Is it intended to solve the use case of delivery of parameters from the user agent client to the user agent server? Because that's what the milestone in the SIP charter, original SIP working group charter, was put there for. Do we think we're doing that with 4244 BIS?
Yes, that's exactly what target URI is, the scope of target URI is. Actually, it's a little bit wider than that. It's not just the parameters. It's the whole URI. But yes. Mary?
No, I'm just anticipating.
Oh, you're just, like, preparing. All right, so we've got the warriors in line here. Let's move on. So this slide is actually the same slide we had at the last meeting. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Keith Trage. Just to correct Dean, it's the delivery of the entire request URI, including the parameters, was the milestone set in the SIP working group. It wasn't just the parameters.
All right, so let's move on to this slide. So this is the same slide we had in the previous meeting, except that it used to be all red, meaning that we hadn't done anything in the previous meeting. So this is basically a summary of the things that we thought we would, the problems that we had with the existing 4244, and, you know, that would probably we need to address in this draft. So it kind of talks about the types of hacks that have been done in the past.
I have a point. That last one, we didn't remove the unwanted entries.
Let me rephrase this.
Okay.
This is not what we've done with the document. This is a description of what people currently do with 4244.
Okay.
It's a sample of tricks that people do. And we're doing things in the document to prevent those types of things from happening. This is really not, so don't do this at home, basically, would be the message. You don't have to do this anymore. Actually, I should probably not have this here. This is kind of bad, actually.
So Colin
yes.
Jennings. So I'm a little bit lost on what this slide is, because a lot of these, like how to get this information out of the draft is what I have complained many times about the draft, or the whole technique is basically lacking. Is there's lots of information. It's basically right now, if you read it, it's a write-only technique. Here's where you write information into this field of headers. But it says very little that I can find in the draft about how you read information out of this header to make any determination you'd want to do, including all of these things.
We had agreed on the list, though, that we would add that.
Yes. So this was actually discussed.
So has that been added at this point, or it was still a to-do item?
That's still somewhat of a to-do. There are some.
So that's the to-do item we've been asking for several years. I would be strongly against this being even considered to be adopted as a working group item until we see that, because lots of people think it's impossible.
Well, wait a second. So the reason it was impossible, this should scare people. When you see something like this.
So why is it all green? You said it was red last time, and now it's green.
Okay.
Anyway.
Basically, we don't have to do this anymore. That's basically what it's intended to do.
So the whole problem that people think is impossible, we don't have to do anymore.
Yes.
How did that work
out? Correct. No. That is correct.
What he's saying is this solution now works around these funny things that people have to do. Sorry, Mary Barnes.
Right, let's move on. Let's move on because this is a bad slide.
Well, it is a bad slide because the last bullet was very misleading, right? Because the proxies did not do that, right?
Yeah.
Let's let Francois explain himself. I mean, go to the next slide.
Oh, no, I had to live through a bad slide yesterday. you get to have it, too, my friend. Hadriel Kaplan. Just to be clear, those things have... I mean, it's not like you don't have to do those things. It's just that we're trying to make it a lot more explicit and easier to do and simpler to do those things, right? And also, on the mailing list, I thought, actually, were we going to do that in a separate document? Here's how to do, you know, the equivalent of a diversion. Here's how to go do the equivalent
of... Right. So that's what we have to decide. Is it separate documents, or are we just going to roll everything in there?
Okay.
So one of the discussions on a mailing list was, as Colin was saying, what is the algorithm for the UAS or the proxy to implement the use cases? And we haven't specifically done that. What we've done is put the tags and the mechanisms that will allow you to have algorithms that are deterministic. That remains to be done, but it's not going to be rocket science, yes?
Yeah.
Well, but in Colin's defense, I mean, without that, it's hard to have a proof. I mean, this is the problem I was having on the mailing list, right?
Yep.
I didn't have that, so I've had a hard time seeing that, like how that was possible.
Correct, and that's why, I mean, there was discussion on the list that highlighted there's different ways you're going to do things for different services, and that's the point of the use cases, yeah.
Right, so we have a few use cases. We'd probably need to translate the use cases that are in there into, I'm not sure we want to make them normative text. I don't think that's really appropriate, but at least an explanation on what the algorithm would be. Because the reality is there's many and many use cases. Maybe there's a few that are so important that we want to put in there. But even when we look at target URI, we discovered basically on the mailing list that target URI is not a single problem. It's actually many different problems. There are algorithms that are looking for the first parameters that were like the first redirection. There's other ones that are looking at the last one, depending on what you're trying to do.
Right. Hadriel Kaplan. So you had an
that may be exactly what I'm looking for. So Cullen Jennings, sorry, as an individual, I think that when I read the draft, I'm always expecting to see, well, in these different use cases, here's what you might want to do to implement this.
Yep.
Because I think without that, we'll never have interoperability of,
yep.
of what's supposed to happen. So maybe it's all fine.
And you think that should be normative, or that should be examples of things that you can do?
Well, I mean, I think for certain functions, they are sort of normative. Yeah, I would
okay.
sort of
For the functions as opposed to the service.
I know people keep bringing up the word service here. I have no idea what a service is, and
it's
I don't
evil.
Know. But when it gets, you know, my voicemails, the people who implement the voicemail server need to know something about what they're going to do, or this isn't
yeah.
going to work. And I don't care if you call that a service or a function.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, the typical case, we've never defined services here. We write BCPs, if you will, if we need to go to that level.
Okay.
Right? What's your name? Oh, sorry.
Christopher Holmberg, no, I agree to that. We don't need to specify services. I agree it could be good to have examples. For example, I mean, let's take the target URI, right? We have an example with describe, and this is how the receiver is going to, you know, retrieve it, the original target or whatever the scope of that was. We don't need to describe, okay, this is then used for whatever service or whatever. This is just, you know, this is how you're going to retrieve it, and then, you know.
Yeah. So that's in there, actually. So
yeah, it is.
So that
I think we have good examples for the target URI delivery. So maybe we need to add or look at the other examples in 44
okay.
2bis and to try to make them more clear.
Okay.
This is Spencer Dawkins. We're talking about stuff on the previous slide, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to move on.
Yeah.
I'm very subtle.
Okay, I'm just trying to stay synchronized. So basically, what I got to say was, I think those things are going to be normative. I think those things are going to be treated. Those use cases will be treated as normative, whether you say they're normative or not, if you write them.
Yeah.
So I think that proceeding under the assumption that they need to be normative is going to be the right way forward, because. Yeah, I mean, people treat examples, you know, call flows as normative.
Okay.
Well, you know, even though we say not to.
And I am sorry for keeping you on one slide. This is Hadriel Kaplan again. In defense of that, I do think it's not services, but there are specific application uses
mm-hmm.
of what's in this information that must be normatively documented somewhere. It doesn't have to be in here, but if we want the version recording, for example, to be consistent.
Yeah.
We have to say must somewhere about which ones you pick, right?
Right.
And the same thing for voicemail, and the same thing for specific target URI delivery applications.
Okay.
And I'm not sure it should go in this document, because they may almost be their individual almost profiles or BCPs of using this. But I will say, one of your earlier slides talked about the target URI draft in particular, and I was really confused reading History Info until I went back and read that. On the mail list, I think I even said that, like, oh, whoa, I went and read this, and they had changed what they were originally doing in target URI. So, in fact, it explained now why we were doing this AOR
uh-huh.
thing instead of looking at the MPs. So,
right.
I do think parts of target URI need to be brought into here, but those are actually maybe
okay.
more specific than a specific application.
Okay. So what I'm getting from the room, just to summarize, is I think we're
don't summarize before
anxious.
I've had my say.
Sorry?
Because I'm about to disagree with Hadriel and Spencer.
All right, go ahead.
So basically, in history info, you've got a number of things you need to do. You need to encode history info. That obviously has to be normative. At some point along the chain, you may manipulate it because you need to apply privacy and things like that. That has to be normative. When you get to the end, basically you're a UA and you basically have a rendering problem, either to another application or to the end user. I'm not convinced any rendering to the end user or to an application necessarily needs to be described in normative terms.
This is Hadriel Kaplan. So as I said, I don't think it should be in this document, but I think we need another document so that implementers can say, yes, I've implemented that way of doing diversion. Now, that doesn't mean you have to implement that way of doing diversion, but if I'm a customer and I buy products from vendor X and vendor Y, and they said, I implemented RFC blah, blah, blah to pull out the diversion information out of history info consistently, then you'll know vendor X and vendor Y pulled it out the same way. Now, of course, we could just leave it to 3GPP or Etsy or whatever to specify the piece, if that's what you prefer, but...
Okay, so I will...
If I can interject, that sounds a lot more like a bliss
okay,
thing.
Okay, I will suggest one thing. So we do have... we were going to go back to this slide at the end, and... sorry, not this slide. this one, yes. And decide what we're going to do with target URI. Do we want a separate document or not? And I think that should address this question. So maybe we should generalize it a little bit more and say, the use cases, are we going to have that in separate document or documents or in this document? So let's go back to this at the end of the meeting. And
right,
decide.
And to me, I just wanted to say, I don't think anybody's disagreeing that we need the use cases somewhere, right? And
yes.
that this does not satisfy 4244 biz right now, as it is, does not satisfy the charter
right.
deliverable.
Right. Okay. So let's do that. Let's not dwell on this for now, and let's continue with this. So this is, again, a slide from the previous meeting, although unlike the other one, this one is a little bit better, I think. That was all red except for the first item that was green in the previous meeting. Those were the problems that we had listed from 4244. It turns out that the only thing that we thought we had fixed at the last meeting, we were wrong, so we reverted that. There was no error in the ABNF. But all the other ones that were red, I believe we have addressed in this draft. Okay, so those are the low-level technical issues that we had with the document. So all the examples were showing strict routing, so we made that loose routing. That's a lot more useful. There was a lot of repetitive text and background information that was kind of confusing. And that shouldn't really be in a RFC, so that's something we fixed. There was a gratuitous mandate to use TLS on all the hops, so we've changed that. We basically have aligned with normal SIP procedures, which is, you know, we recommend you use TLS, but we don't have wording that says, if you can't do TLS on a hop, just like kill history info, which is what it used to say. Which we found zero implementation that actually do this.
I just want to clarify, that's what they made me do back then, so.
Sorry?
Mary. I mean, that was the scope of the work back then. This is Mary Barnes.
I
know.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. There were some terminology issues from RFC 3261 that I think we've addressed with the use of reroute versus retarget and forward and so forth. I don't want to describe that now. You can look at the draft, but it's a little bit clearer. And then finally, absorbing the changes from the target URI delivery draft. So we've done that too. As we said earlier, we've even recuperated the editors, the authors of the document. All right, so let's move on to the next slide. So this is a summary of what we've done since last time. So we've added a bunch of new tags for individual entries that are useful both for target URI and the redirection use cases. As we just discussed earlier, we probably want some more information to explain what the behavior on the UAS or the proxy should be when you get the tags. Today, it's really you have to read the examples in the appendix to figure it out. So we've replaced the examples with more meaningful ones. Significant trimming of text. We have, so this is actually quite important. We've significantly tightened the procedures. We've had an awful lot of optional and, should, maybe, if you feel like it, do this before in RFC, in history info. That really was a huge issue for interoperability. So now it's really a must unless we have a really good reason not to do something. We have reordered some of the text. There was some issue with the order of the text in the document, things that didn't flow properly, or procedures that were applicable to more than one section that were not in the right place. And finally, and this is something Keith mentioned earlier, privacy is now achieved by using RFC 3323, i.e. by anonymizing the entries instead of removing them. The reason for that is if you remove an entry, you actually remove information that is actually often very useful for a call, like it was redirected. If you remove the entry, you lost the fact that it was redirected, which is really bad for a lot of these features. So that's basically what we've done with the document so far. Question?
My name is Philippe Fougard. There was a comment on the list related to the removal of reason when there was a timeout or an internal don't think that was. I've had a look at the next slides, and it doesn't seem to be addressed. I can probably point the message that was posted on list. I'm not an expert on this, but it doesn't seem to be addressed here. So
I don't think I've addressed it either. So I think I missed it. So if you can bring that back to the list, that would be great. Because at one point there was quite a few emails, so I might have missed one or two.
Okay,
thanks. Okay, all right, so let's move on. So let's move on to the issues. And what I'll try to do in the order of time is if anything looks slightly controversial, we'll just bring back to the list. issue one was the AOR tag. So what has happened on the list, there was a lot of discussion. And basically what happened is a lot of people, I would say, were misinterpreting what we were trying to do with this. We're not trying to define what an AOR is. So after a lot of back and forth, I believe that people are now in agreement that what we're doing actually does make sense. And what we're really doing is a proxy that is responsible for the domain. And when it does recognize a URI as something that, A, it's responsible for, so within its own domain, and recognizes it as an AOR, which we've used the strict definition from the R3261, which is if it's something that you do a location server dip on, then you mark it as an AOR. And that's what it means. It doesn't mean that anything more than that. And the objective of this is basically to filter out things that are not within your domain or are kind of these weird little manipulated URIs that you often get when you originate a call. So that's what we've done with this. You want to say something to that point or to the whole thing?
To the AOR part.
Yep.
Or do you want to wait?
This is all about AOR.
I know. Do you want us to wait till the end or the...
It doesn't matter to me. If it's on this point, go ahead. Otherwise, we'll finish the slide.
Oh, no. We'll finish the slide.
Okay. All right. So one question that was asked on the list was really, how do you treat IP addresses that are used as domains? As many of you, I'm sure, I'm aware, there are service providers who basically use IP addresses, and they are really using it as a domain. There is no domain, really. So what we've basically, I think, said on the mailing list, and that will need a clarification in the text, is if you're using it that way, then you should treat it as an AOR. I mean, if that's what, if you only use the IP addresses, and you recognize the user part as something you do a location service, and then you deliver it to the registered contact or whatever, or map it to something else, flag it as an AOR. Yep.
Hi, Hadriel Kaplan. So let's be clear, right? 3261, as far as I'm aware, uses, it says exactly what you just said. And as far as I'm aware, that is a completely ambiguous definition, right? A location service is whatever I want it to be. It can be an enum query, it can be a database, it can be a static table I have configured.
Yes, absolutely. And that's
exactly
the point.
So it's everything. That's kind of my point.
No, it's not.
It's virtually everything.
No, it's not. So let me go through this. So the point that's really important in here is that it is the proper domain that can do this. So that's, you're trying to filter out all the stuff that happens, first of all, before you get to the right domain. So
that'll do
that, which is actually quite important. The second part is what we're trying to filter out is these manipulations that are often done by outbound proxies.
Yes, I'm well aware.
Typically for phone numbers, but always for phone numbers, really, where you remove prefixes and garbage like that, and then because the end user realistically just types some digits on a phone that are typically do not have very good regular expression translations to map it into something that's actually legal in SIP. So basically, at the end of the day, it is an AOR because the domain, the proxy responsible for it says it's an AOR. That's really what it means. It's when the proxy is okay with it, he tags it. And to me, that's a perfect definition, right? Yep.
It's like, it makes me insane. I don't know. Okay, all right. So let me step back. It makes, because I can't grok that statement. Like, it is what you say it is. You know, it's a...
When the proxy decides that it's an AOR, it's an AOR. I mean, seriously. It means it...
keep a straight
face? Adriel, it's very easy to understand. I mean, in the definition if in 3261, when you recognize an address that you can route... because you can do a location service on it, you're finished. I mean, it's very deterministic. Yeah,
I don't disagree. That's what 3261 says. That's why I'm saying it's basically everything, with the exception, you're right, number of translations, right? Which is, by the way, a good property to bypass, to,
yes,
you know, to skip those things.
Yeah.
But one of your purported concepts with this was to skip the strict routing boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the strict routers replace it with the next hops. You know, user at domain, it's the domain part is a host name of the next hop. The next hop says, yeah, that's me, I'm responsible for that. I'll do a location service, which is a route table lookup, and I go send it to the next guy, and I'll replace the request here. That's strict routing. And they will each, by definition, fall within the, yes, it's my domain, namely me, and I use a location service, namely my enum query, and voila, I've strict, you know, it's every strict route is an AOR too. I mean, that's where, and I'm not saying this is fixable, by the way. I don't know how to do this right,
okay,
but I'm just saying it's a weird...
So I must admit that the strict routing case was not the highest priority, but I mean, we should probably discuss it.
I thought that was the... I thought we were trying to get rid of the fluff and the mailing list we were talking about. You know, this is to get rid of the fluff entries in the,
yeah,
in the history.
So we should think about what do we do with the strict routers, absolutely.
Okay.
I think we should bring that one to the list. If we want to do anything about it, I'm fine with it.
I think Keith was before.
Yes, I was. Keith Drage. Concentrate on what you actually need to write within the scope of 4244 in the thread. Because a lot of the discussion on this, I think, is sort of verged into, I'm not exactly sure what 3261 says. And that's got to be fixed in 3261, not in 4244.
I don't disagree, but 4244 says,
right,
we're going to do what 3261
yeah
says.
Yeah.
So
the other thing I'm seeing is that maybe, you know, what you're saying is that you're getting conflation of two different things you want to actually separate within the definition as it currently stands. I think if you do that, then you've got to identify by use cases why you actually need to split AORs into two or whatever it is you need to do to fit your use cases. And I haven't yet seen that appearing on the list.
So John Peterson, and terrifyingly, I substantially agree with Hadriel. So whatever property it is that you think is being communicated by saying that a URI is an AOR, given the way that AOR is defined in RFC 3261, which you seem to be following here, I don't think could provide any useful information to something that's trying to make a decision, would be the way that I would cast it. Because I know what a location service is. It's not a location server, by the way. It's a location service. And as Hadriel suggested, it is completely arbitrary why it's queried and what the results of that process are. And I mean, I see no reason, you know, that the location service could not be invoked to describe the simple number translation function, actually, that you clearly want to avoid. It's not constrained in any way in 3261 that allows you to spread, you know, split that out from it. So I mean, I suggest find another name for it. I know this is a suggestion that's appeared on the list a number of times, that is not AOR for what the property is that you think these URIs need to have in order for them to be useful for the decision you're trying to make at the end of this process.
We can find an AOR, but we can find a different name for AOR if you want.
No.
I mean,
find a different name for the property you want to make a decision based on, because it's not that this is an AOR or not, I promise. Because AOR is not defined in a way that will give you any useful information at the end of this, at the end of the route.
Well, this is not true. It's not true because the ones that are not marked AOR are basically useless, and that's really the ones that are not.
That may be true. That may be true, Francois, but that's because you're imagining that the entities that choose whether to mark this as an AOR or not are making a decision that, to my mind, has little to do with whether or not they qualify as AORs, because the definition of AOR is simply not as rigid as you're asserting it is here.
Can we have a parameter called useful, useless?
We have that for the other dimension we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Ole Johansson from the Yab Room, acting as Mr. John Elwell. He says there was also an issue about entities that issue a 3XX. Do they tag URIs as AOR?
That is actually described very precisely in the document, and it really depends, again, if that entity is responsible for it or not. If you're a UA, you know. And if you're a proxy, though, and you're sending a 3XX, then you do, if it's something that you're responsible for. So that's actually in the document.
Adam Roach from the floor. I wanted to point out that a discussion of strict routing as it interacts with history info is predicated on the existence of a node that's implemented 4744 or its BIS and is still on 2543, which I think is a little unlikely.
Hadriel Kaplan, while I would love to agree with you, Adam, so many devices are doing what we would call strict routing, even though they think they're not, right? But they have if you do an enum query, for example, that NAPTA result replaces the request URI. And from your perspective, it's a strict route. I mean, or from our perspective, I should say, even though from the box's perspective, it's resolving a URI, a phone number, rather, to a URI.
Yeah, I think using that term in a way that's not
so I believe the term, not the way 2543 may say it, but the way he's trying to get to it is whenever we're replacing the request URI purely for routing purposes, that's not getting it to the last, not the resolution to the last hop. I would call that as a strict route today.
That's not strict routing.
That is the, yes, as I just said, it's not the 2543 one. The word strict route that we're using here is actually any property in which the request URI is replaced.
No. 2543 doesn't even have the word strict route in it. That's a 3261 right. concept, and it is a very specific thing that talks about how to process messages that have route headers in them. If you're trying to overload the phrase strict route to mean something else, then it's introducing confusion into the conversation. Let's please untangle that.
Okay. And for clarification, this is Hadriel again. That is what you meant on the mailing list about strict route, though. Am I incorrect? You weren't literally talking about what 3261 calls a strict route. Is that right? Route header processing that way. That was my impression. And if my impression was wrong on the mailing list, I apologize. I thought that you guys were using it in a different semantic than that one. Is that not true?
I don't know. I mean,
well, I will, you know, just to help clarify what Francois is trying to think through. Strict routing refers explicitly to the processing a proxy is required to do when a route header shows up and it doesn't have semicolon LR in it.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Okay. So the examples. So the only time I brought the word strict routing was actually not to refer to this. It was to refer to the fact that in the previous examples in the first version of 4244, none of them were all the example were showing the request URI changing every time you hit a proxy.
Right.
That's what the examples were in some of the examples in the previous version. As a consequence of that, instead of showing redirection as in the classical sense, you had a lot of, you know, oh, well, this proxy is changing the URI whenever it's sending it to the next proxy.
Yeah.
And it made the examples less than useful.
Agreed.
For practical purposes. So that's what I was referring to. So
right.
I guess I have used it.
So I guess we have a suggestion not to call it that. We'll find some other word. Request route replacement for route sets or something like that.
I don't think there's any mention of strict routing in the document.
Right, it was just a mailing list.
Yeah.
Jonathan Lennox, sort of combining some things that I've heard before, I think the question of what the AOR tag means, I mean, you were discussing the complaining about this seemed like sort of a write-only protocol. If I receive an entry with an AOR tag, what can I conclude happened?
So yeah, right, so that's actually really the real point. So.
Yeah.
What you're trying to do is figure out at what point was this thing recognized as something that's useful. That's really the point of the tag. And the previous entries before that are kind of useless because it doesn't really tell you anything. Somebody is still mucking around with the URI, and at a certain point, then it uses it for something. And that's what we're trying to convey.
Dean Willis here.
Yep.
I think that what you mean when you say AOR in a tag is that there has been a rerouting operation executed by a proxy. not a retargeting operation. So the identity is preserved, the target identity is preserved across the transformation, because that's what you get with an AOR. Traditionally, it was contact routing, where you replaced the original AOR with the contact header.
And
I think we stay with that definition. It's fairly clear. I don't know if that's really, I'd call it AOR.
So you will get the AOR tag in today.
Right, so this is rerouting.
Whenever you get anything, whenever you get retargeting, which actually is defined in the document as a bunch of things, you can have a forwarding to a registered contact, for example. So let's say I'm sending something to Dean at, you know, whatever, example.com, and then it sends it to Dean at 192 blah, 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 which is your registered contact. The one that's Dean at whatever, at example.com, will be the one that's marked with AOR. And then the next one after that will not. It'll be marked with, you know, registered contact or something.
So what you're what you've done is you've marked the before case of a proxy rerouting operation. You're saying that the next destination is a reroute from the thing you've marked with an AOR.
Yes.
And that's all that you can really say about it conclusively.
And that's exactly what we want. We don't want to read too much into this. If, again, we can call it something else than AOR. I mean, yep.
Bernie Hüneisen. A lot of this discussion was also the use case when a URI gets replaced by an enum, by query in enum and its result. I was just thinking if we could, in these cases, mark it instead of AOR, enum, which might leave us even more properties to distinguish. So at least these use cases ruled out, and maybe nothing is left.
Somebody else wants to talk on this.
I suggest we add SQL and Radius and all that.
You used the term use case there, and that what you described is not directly a use case. Remember that what we're trying to do here is, with this tag, is just distinguish different request URIs from each other for the purposes of the application or user to whom you are rendering this information. Those are the use cases. There's no use cases along the path or at the point where you generate this. The use case is, I have an application that needs to distinguish URI A from URI B at the end of the chain. So please, when you're actually trying to discuss why you need the tag, concentrate on those use cases.
John Peterson again. I think Keith's advice there is actually very good advice. But I would like to say that the route to that, I believe, is not through, as Dean suggested, casting this as rerouting versus retargeting or something. That means as little to me as the distinction between an AOR and a contact address does. This is merely pushing the problem around. We tried to solve this problem before, like for security purposes, of the difference between retargeting and something else that wasn't quite retargeting, and we couldn't solve it. And there's a fundamental architectural reason, I believe, why you can't solve it, because these things are just URIs, okay? And URIs identify a resource on the internet. There's nothing innate about them that is going to be tested by proxy servers and is going to put them on either side of this. Now, if it's, as Keith and other speakers have suggested, there is some specific property that this entity at the end of the chain is going to use to make a decision. We need to identify what that is and name it and make that be the thing that proxies can somehow recognize in these URIs and attach to them as they go by, to the history entries, I mean. But I am deeply skeptical that that is possible, just precisely because these things are merely identifiers, and the transformations of these identifiers don't have the kinds of essential properties that we are trying to impute to them here.
Well,
they don't.
You can say that, but the reality is you consult a location service to do something with an address because you've recognized it. It's a piece of information. It's very different than I have a static rule that basically says, you know, I'm going to do manipulation of the digit and
change
something.
I'm here to tell you, it is not remotely different. Any forwarding table or whatever you consult is equivalent logically to the functioning of a location service. I wrote Section 10 in 3261. I know what a location service is. There are no bounds on it. Okay.
So how would you distinguish between URIs that are reachable and useful versus ones that are not? That's exactly what this is trying to do.
A URI's usefulness or not is determined as it is dereferenced, as it is in every other context in which URIs are utilized. And this is incredibly dependent on who dereferences it and what the mechanism is for dereferencing it. This is not, it's not an essential property that can be, you know, just ascribed to it in this fashion. It's entirely contextually dependent.
Well, a URI that's reachable in my mind, which would actually be a real URI.
Reachable by what?
By anybody.
Yeah, from what, the big eye internet, or, I mean, this URIs depend on who's trying to dereference them, in what context, at what time, you know, they don't have essential properties. They are merely, enough information that you can use to consult some process to dereference them. That's all they are, and we're trying to impute to them qualities that they cannot architecturally possess. And that is why we have struggled with this for so long and will continue to struggle
you're asserting
with this, and we're unable to solve it before.
Well, I mean, there's URIs that you can put on a business card or, you know, give to somebody else and you can use it, and then there's URIs that are not. The only guy's going to understand it is your first proxy.
I can put my contact address on my business card, and if it happens that my phone happens to have that contact address, it will be useful to people.
Right. But if you put the dialing sequence that you do to call me on a business card, it's not going to be useful to anybody else except people that are in your, you know, originating.
You know, that's
proxy.
Not actually true. For all I know, the same PBX that you have in your office, I have in my office too. And if I tried that dialing sequence in my office, it would actually work. This is not an essential property of the URI. It is contextual and dependent on how the URI is invoked and dereferenced. I cannot. This is fundamentally what URIs are. And if we do not understand this, it is hopeless to try to address this issue.
Well, again, every 90% of the phones out there, when they use phone numbers, they use a URI that is not globally reachable.
Keith?
Right.
Keith Drage.
Maybe we mark them instead as useless. I don't know.
Yeah. Keith Drage.
Keith.
Just to throw something else into the pot, I mean, you're making the assumption that these URIs need to be reachable in order to provide the application that you're trying to do. If you're trying to, for example, use this to implement something like the ISDN diversion service, then I'm not actually sure the ISDN diversion service says the URI that the identities provided in that service need to be reachable. For calling line identity, it does say that, but I don't think it says it for diversion. So, I mean, you've got to look at the use case yet again and say, is this what I'm really trying to do?
Well, we've looked at them. Here's what I can say to this. The authors that we have are the people that actually care about this, and they all think that it actually helps to solve their problem. Now, that's what I can say. And I would like proposals on what to do as opposed to, like, you know, abstract description of why it's not good. So go ahead.
We
have to move on to
something. We have five issues. I mean, we have plenty of time. We have almost one hour. But it would be great if we move on, and then if we have more time, we come back to issue one. Otherwise, we take it to the list.
But I think this is almost the whole crux of the, I think. I mean,
yeah.
I may be wrong, but.
Well, I think
at least on the mailing list, this was basically the big.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to go through all the issues just to check that that's the case, and then we can come back, as I said. I mean, if the other issues, we solve them in 3 minutes, we'll be back, you know, in this issue in no time.
Okay.
Can
we do the mic use now, or should we sit down now?
The last comments, and then we move on.
Oh, okay. So, Hadriel Kaplan, just to address, I mean, I appreciate that the authors have worked hard on this, and it's, you know, I didn't mean to create a firestorm of emails on the mailing list, but it really, that was my point, was you tell me what parameter in a URI tells me it's an AOR, because I don't know what one makes it one. And I don't disagree that you know what an AOR is when you see one. It really is, that was my comment about it. It's like porn versus art, you know it when you see it, but it's not knowable to a machine. I mean, let me get this straight.
This
you said that the people who are concerned about this, you know, worked on the document and they have the use cases in mind. I'm concerned about it because an SBC is going to have to be fixing this all day long because they're all going to get it wrong for what the other guy expects it to be. And that's my real concern about this, is that if these things are not really crisp as to who marks what, when, and why, it's just a mapping nightmare, right, of vendor X to vendor Y.
Yeah, which is exactly why it's very deterministic in the text, but anyways. Yep.
Okay, acting as John Elwell again. He's saying in the Jab Room, John Peterson's comments are very much in line with what I was starting to conclude. The difficulties a US has in figuring out how to interpret a URI merely being pushed to the proxy redirect which is likely to have similar difficulties. This enhancement to history info seems to do more harm than good.
So, John Peterson, I really do. I wish I had like good advice for you about this in terms of here's a practical solution. But to be clear, if I could solve this, I could solve the real security problems in SIP, right? The ones that we can't solve. And so I'm just saying, like, don't say that because, oh my God, this problem has to be solvable in some fashion, because there are some problems we just can't solve. And I believe this is one of them, because I've spent a hell of a lot of time trying to solve it. But if I think there may be another problem that is easier to solve, that you are ignoring, perhaps, in favor of trying to solve this extremely difficult problem, which, as Keith and others have advised you, is to figure out what the semantics are that are required by the entity that you want to make a decision based on history info at the end of the day, and to define those semantics in a way that does not involve having to distinguish whether a URI is an AOR or not. That is like one of the hardest possible problems you could be trying to solve. I'm sure there is an easier problem to solve about all this that will provide still enough useful information that the entity at the end of the chain will be able to make a decision. So I would recommend, the concrete proposal is, that you define that semantics in a way that is not reliant on this like intractable Gordian knot.
Robert, a final comment before we move on?
Yeah, just a final one. Just trying to listen to how the conversation's going. One of the places where I think that there is an impedance mismatch in the back and forth, I see Francois saying that I'm processing this thing, I know it's an AOR, I can mark it as an AOR. Fine. You'd probably mark it as an AOR again when it went back through you as a proxy if you're doing this processing thing. Mm-hmm. The question is, you're this proxy, you've done this thing, you send it to me. I get this thing that's marked that you've marked as an AOR. So what? You know, what does that mean to me? It effectively doesn't, you know, I could send it back to you, maybe you'd mark it as an AOR again, but to me, that doesn't tell me anything about what it meant to you that was an AOR.
So the way I see this is when you have a system, a system that recognizes, that has a number of users configured into it, or phone numbers, they have an account. And when you recognize the address that you have decided is something that corresponds to that account, you mark it as an AOR. If it's not something like that, then you don't. I mean, that's...
You're definitely not hearing my statement.
Okay.
You're busy talking about what you would do as a proxy.
Yes.
That's not what I'm asking. What do I do as the UA that I got this thing that you marked?
It's to try to... So the consumer...
No, this is not real time. I'm just trying to say that this is adjusting the thing.
Right.
This is where the conversation...
All right.
Okay.
I think he has a slide to answer that, by the way.
Okay.
Just to be clear, I mean, you have an issue 4 slide that says, here's an application that looks for the last AOR marked one. That's, right, that's, I believe, what it's for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on to the next slide.
Okay, this
said,
one should actually be a little bit more, a little bit easier. Although you never know. This is basically the issue of the second dimension of tags that we have in there, where we actually mark entries in different ways. So the intent of this one is actually to mark the things that are not terribly useful for any of the applications that we can think of. What we've done, so there's different ways we can deal with these things. Currently in the draft, what we've done to avoid getting into philosophical discussions is we've used a very mechanical way of tagging things based on things that are very deterministic, and we've invented tag names for this. So right now we have something called, if you look at alternative one, this is what we have in the document. So basically there's a registered contact, a configured contact, and routing, so normal SIP routing, which basically means no ops and strict routing and things of that nature. So that's the alternative we have in the document right now. So you can read the details, but it's extremely mechanical. The other alternative that was proposed is basically, well, you know, we don't really care about the distinction between these things. It's the real point is that this is all fluff. We don't necessarily want to do anything useful with this, so let's just mark it as such. So that's the second alternative. A third alternative was to not tag them at all. And finally, something that we didn't discuss that much on the list, although I believe at the previous meeting we did talk about this, was to remove them actively. Okay? So the authors don't have a strong preference on one or two. So we can talk about this. The problem there, but we do have a problem, however, with three and four. The problem with three is that you can't distinguish entries that are actually one of the authors actually like three. I will clarify that. The problem with three is if you don't have a backward compatibility mechanism, and his point is let's just do versioning of history info instead. Okay, so that was basically the point. So, anyways. What you want to do for backward compatibility is know if something was an RC 4244 entries or something that was not. And 4 also has the same backward compatibility issue that if it was an old history info proxy, then they may or may not have removed the information. So I'd like some suggestion on which one we should use.
I think Adriel got there first, and Mary was there
Go
before
ahead, Keith.
Me. No,
oh.
Mary was there before me anyway.
So. Oh, sorry. four, you as much as I'd love four. By the way, means don't add the HI entry at all. The entire entry, right?
You remove the entry. Yes.
Yeah, I'd love four, but you can't do it because
exactly.
The next hop needs to have it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. to determine that thing. So, but I'd love it.
Yeah, me
just
too.
To be clear, number three, I got to admit, I don't see how this thing's going to be backward compatible at all anyway. Let me explain why. Right now, your idea is, if and correct me if I'm wrong, when you're the UAS receiving this list, mm-hmm. if the entry has no tags, MP, AOR, RCR, RCC, FUBAR, whatever, then it is an old-style history info.
Mm-hmm.
How will we do anything with old-style history infos mixed with new-style history infos with these applications that we want to actually use?
So I'll give you an example. So let's say you're a voicemail system, for example.
Yeah.
You may actually play the prompt that asks you what you want to do as opposed to go directly to a mailbox or the type of procedures that are typically automatic. You know, when you reach a voicemail box today, If you're using a mechanism like redirection, if you can't find the information or it's ambiguous, then you normally play a prompt. You know, do you want to do? Leave a message or blah blah blah. So you may do something like this. You may basically say, I don't have enough information, as opposed to be misled that you think you have the information. So you could do something like that, for example.
I mean, what is it going to do? It's going to play out saying, I've received the following history infos. Please select one. I mean, I really don't understand it.
No, a voicemail system, based on redirection, you decide, are you trying to deposit a message or retrieve a message?
Yeah. No, I'm
And
with
when you
there.
Don't know, it says, what do you want to do? You want to deposit a message?
I'm just thinking it from the diversion case, and I'm like, if we've got old entries in here that aren't marked with these new markings, then we basically have to pretend like it's marked with everything. I mean, I
agree with you that if they're intermixed,
yeah,
it's going to be difficult. If they're not intermixed,
let's say
they're all old. If they're all old, you're just going to keep the same logic you had before.
Which so didn't work. Isn't that the case?
It did not interoperate, but at least...
Well, that's not working. I mean,
this is actually important. So if I have a system today that works with my stuff, okay, then I'm great to this. I don't want my existing installation to suddenly break, right? So at least with that, then my old stuff will continue to work. I'll do exactly the logic
right.
that I had before. And then when I see that there's these new tags, then I can bring in the new interoperable logic. That's basically the idea. Right? So when you have flag day and you start upgrading this, you don't like break all your applications, which would be kind of bad.
Yeah.
I mean, so and the rationale for doing a tag is very simple. In this draft, anything that's new is tag, anything that's old is not tag. That's basically what it is. And that's the versioning mechanism.
Right. This is Mary Barnes. Well, first I went to Hans Erik finally came around and realized that he didn't like the three anymore. But the thing we talked about offline was that if we go ahead and tag them, even if they're, I don't know how to say this, when you get to the next hop and you see that it's not tagged and you support this, we want to go ahead, for example, and still tag the AOR if we know that, or whatever we're going to call that thing, however we're going to figure that out. And yep. That way, when it gets to the UAS, he at least has some confidence in that entry. And he doesn't know if it's an MP or a fluff, right? But it might be helpful. And while I'm up here, I like the one because I don't think it causes any harm to have all three, and it might be helpful for debug.
Okay, so we got one in favor of one,
Keith Drage. Obviously this brings out one of the points I've been trying to belabor off list, is that I believe 4244 bis and 4244 should be backwards compatible and forwards compatible with 4244.
Right.
So I think we need to establish that principle at some point.
Does anybody disagree with this? I mean, that would be a really good progress because we could remove 3 and 4 if everybody agrees with that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there will be some subcases where it's so broken that you couldn't make it compatible, which because you just don't know what you implement. We had one or two cases with that, with 3.2.6.1 against 2.5.4.3. But, you know, in general, the principle and guidance to the editors, if we take this as a working group item, if we don't give any other guidance at all, I guess, but is compatibility forward and backwards.
Anyone disagree? This had real cap. Are there really a lot of vendors doing this today? History Info, the old 4244 in real world. Okay.
That's what we're saying, yeah.
Because otherwise, I'd be like, you guys are, this is going to cause so many problems.
This is widely deployed, actually.
Yeah, that may cause more problems. So I think Mary actually just found a bug with this concept, right? So if you're allowed to mark a previous entry AOR and I receive it as a UAS, I see AOR, I assume you're the new version. And I assume, therefore, the lack of MP means it was not redirected.
Is why we need to have this tag.
No, you just missed the...
No, because this one here, to always... This is why 3 does not work and 4 does not work, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to have...
Now, I think what Adriel is saying is that you could... You may know that the previous proxy was 4244 bis because he marked it as AOR, but... I mean, to be honest, right now, the chance that we get the AOR tag in there seems fairly slim. So I'd rather we don't intermix the two discussions and finish this one first. And Adriel, you have to also remember that there's a previous proxy in the next one. If the previous one was 4244, the next one could be 4244 bis. I mean,
I don't disagree. I just would assert that basically all bets are off at that point. I just think this thing is, if we go forward with having AOR, MP, and other things, and we go use them for applications, if there's a mix, it's toast. I mean, we're just based. It's just a personal opinion.
It's not
obviously.
Always toast.
I mean,
so, Adriel, it's not always toast. If there's a mix...
The fact that it's not always anything means it's toast,
it's
a case-by-case basis. That's toast to me.
No, this is not true. You may have an application that only cares about the very last redirection. And if your very last proxy, which is typical, if your very last proxy is 4244 bis... So let's say a target URI scenario.
Keep going.
Then you're not toast.
That's
right.
It
doesn't matter at all the crappy proxy you had before.
And if by coincidence it came in from a proxy that supported 4244, it is toast. Right? Because it doesn't have the MP tag. Yeah. Because you missed the fact there was a redirection there.
No, again, the target URI scenario, which is one of the main one.
You said retargeting.
I had the mic. I got interrupted by Hadriel to start off with. And I'm getting fed up with Hadriel and Francois having dialogues between the mic line and the speaker, because that is not the point of the mic line. The mic line is to stand at the mic and make a point.
I apologize, Keith. I thought you had actually relinquished when you said,
do you
disagree?
I've already tried twice to say I had not finished.
Very well.
Okay, Keith, finish your statement.
The semantics of effectively untagged is basically the send, when you receive it, you do not know what the semantics of the tagging are. That may or may not be pertinent to the renderer, depending on what the renderer information is trying to get out of it. So, for example, if you've got something that's trying to identify the last diversion, then untagged, you know, items in the middle don't matter. If you've got something that's trying to identify the first, then again, untagged don't matter. If you've got something that's trying to identify all the diversions, then all it can say is there may have been some in the middle that didn't carry a tag, and therefore they could have been valid diversions. I would also point out that there may be other parameters in there that could identify something as a diversion under the old system that add information over and above tag, because no one's taken away, as far as I know, the reason header, and no one's taken away the other RFC that adds URI parameters to it for voicemail. Mm-hmm. So there is other information apart from the tags that may be used by a renderer to identify what it is. But as far as the tagging is concerned, no tag means effectively unknown. It has an implicit value. We shouldn't reuse that no tagging for any meaning in the new version. So that's where I was trying to get to.
Well, I'm a little bit confused. Let me make sure I didn't misunderstand what you said. If there's no tag today in the draft, it means it was the old version.
No. Well,
yes.
Well, I don't believe we should be using that distinction. I think we should just give it the semantics of unknown.
No, I don't think so, because then you don't know if it's back. Then it cannot be possibly backward compatible, because you will never know if it was a previous version or not.
I don't think the important thing is the previous version. It's the functionality you've got in the AORs that you've actually got in the history info.
Yeah, I completely disagree. I mean, if you cannot distinguish if this was a 4244 BIS or the basically unpredictable behavior of 4244, then it's pretty difficult to do anything useful.
Well, the main reason why I want to know whether it's old version or new version is in a protocol is because I want to send something back, and I need to know whether to send it back under the rules of the old protocol or the new. And I don't need to do that in history info.
So that would work if the old protocol was predictable. But the whole problem with history info is everybody's using it differently. That is the problem. So, again, the whole point is, if it's old, do whatever you used to do, and you won't bring anything else. And if it's new, then we hopefully have a set of common rules on how to process it. That's the point of having everything tagged in the new draft.
Well, yes.
Are you guys done with your discussion? So, Hadriel Kaplan, as my only point is that it's garbage in, garbage out. If you include the garbage of the previous, we will unfortunately have garbage. And the scenario you described, where if something in the middle supports the legacy one and the top and the bottom supports the new one, you're correct. That would work if you're looking for the top or the bottom. Of course, if there's something at the top or the bottom that supported the old one and the guys in the middle did the new one, you would have absolutely no idea that anything at the top or the bottom, what had occurred in terms of redirection, with pure just redirection, diversion model redirection, right? And to me, the biggest, and I know this voice XML is actually a very important use case too, so I should say it's not the biggest, but diversion for me happened as a point, not discussion. Diversion is, unfortunately for me, a very important use case that needs to come out of this, and this is still looking incredibly much more complicated than the actual diversion, non-IETF diversion header today.
Mary Barnes. I mean, I'll agree with that last point. I don't think anybody will disagree with that. If we did specific headers for all these things, life would be easier for some people, probably. But I want to go back to your last example that you gave, where the last proxy did not support this, right, and the one hot prior did. This is why you must have this entry, because if we don't tag these cases, which all this means is it wasn't a mapped one, it's not an MP one, then that last entry, you don't know whether or not it supported this document or not, right? 4244 or 4244 biz. You see? So this is why you have to have that tag for these cases.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is what we're talking about here. We just want to know, then, do people want one or two, then? Right?
Yeah, so we've got one suggestion from Mary. She prefers one. Anybody has another opinion? We did have some people on the list that liked that option two, but...
Adam Roach, pretending to be on the floor, I agree with Mary that has good diagnostic properties. I mean, if you're trying to say, I'm putting something on here to distinguish them, then making it slightly more useful, I think, is the better way to go.
Okay. All right, so I don't... Is Colin going to the mic? All right.
apologize to the individual here. I think that one of the reasons that this discussion is really difficult is because we keep talking about what people are going to do that write all of these values in versus what happens when you read them out. So it's like diagnostics for what? How can you determine anything from any of these things, right? I mean, we need to focus on what semantics we need to deliver to the far end, then figure out what tags we need to do it, and it would be easy to answer these questions.
Yeah.
So I don't really have an opinion which one we should do, other than I love fluff.
So let me answer that question specifically for this slide. So I don't believe anybody had any use case for distinguishing between those three values. They would basically mean no ops. You don't do anything with those. We haven't found any algorithm that actually uses information for anything.
So the idea that we're writing information in and we have no idea what we're going to do with it is like one of the things that made the original history info draft so difficult to deal with in implementations.
Sure.
I'm not saying one's wrong. Maybe we should write them in. But the fact that we don't have any clue why we would write them in yet suggests that we're not at a point that we can make a rational decision on this.
On the fluff versus no fluff.
Yeah.
Right. So again, what Mary's saying is, at least you'll know that the reason you got this information was because it was a registered contact. But you're right. I mean, I don't.
You might. You might not.
No.
I mean,
no. We know because these are very deterministic how we determine
these. Not deterministic.
Yes, they are.
Let me finish.
Okay.
They're not deterministic if you don't know which one of the devices in the chain supported this mechanism and which ones don't. That's what causes the problem here. If everybody implemented it, they would be.
No, we do, because then they wouldn't be marked.
Right.
At all. If they don't support this, there's no marking. I mean, it's as simple as that, which is the previous point.
Right, but that doesn't... the information that you can extract out about the chain of headers because some people are marking and some people don't is not deterministic in understanding the overall what happened. Right. So,
So in all practical algorithm that we've thought of, you basically either in the forward or the reverse direction, depending what you're trying to do, you go through the list. Whenever you see those, you say, let's go to the next one. You know, any one of those here, you just don't use them. That's basically what it is.
If all practical algorithms have a wide class of things that you don't use, I mean, why did we ever write those into the message in the first place? Right? That's a strong indication that it's just the wrong design.
You mean as opposed to what, to remove them?
Can I address that answer? It's like a reason phrase. It's not for machines. This is for helping you afterwards in the logs. Sadriel.
Have you ever looked at the history info log of any message that's bounced through a complex network? Humans cannot figure out what they mean.
I don't disagree with you, but that's what these particular params are. You're saying what is being used by the application? And you should have this text in the draft that you shall never use these by the UAS for anything because they will be wrong consistently, right? I mean, even registered contact, if I do an enum lookup, I don't know if that enum entry was created by a registration request or not, and I resolved it. So you can't actually determine...
Be the second one. It would actually be configured.
Right,
contact.
Even though it was actually a registered contact that I did a resolution with, right? So it's... Do you follow me?
No.
Oh, in some systems you can register that updates an enum table. A device can then look up the enum table, you know, for inbound requests and immediately route it.
This is the entry after. This is the thing that was the contact in the register message.
That's right.
That's it.
Yes.
It's as simple as that.
It's in a database, and the database doesn't always know if it got it from a registration message or not. So
right, which would argue in favor of the fluff, actually.
That's my point. This
Absolutely.
Is basically a no-op reason phrase.
Yeah.
Do not use this thing. Just record it in the log so that somebody can look at it and maybe help them a little bit. That's my point. Don't use it for anything.
Yes. So the point is that the proxy may actually not record that information in the database. Right. That is correct.
That's
my
point. These things will not be correct, deterministically correct across the network.
I personally
which
think...
Which is fine. There's
right.
nothing wrong with that because they're not being used for anything.
Right.
That's why we could have used fluff. You just wanted more info for the
right.
logs.
We could use fluff.rc if we wanted to, and if you don't know, just put fluff, right?
Or fluff equals rc.
Yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
Anyways, so I don't think we're... I think it's unlikely. I think what I propose we do is we mark it as open. But we're going to do either the fluff or not. I'll leave it like it is, and I'll say one alternative is to package them all together with fluff, and you know, we can determine later on the mailing list. But
this is Mary.
Just hold on a second. So you can pace your presentation. You have 25 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. I don't want to rat hole here, this is Mary again, but back to Colin's point, I mean, some of the stuff he's highlighting, what that is changing the core requirements that went into 4244. If we want to go back and do that, then we are really talking about a different solution, and we can go back and spend another 3-4 years working on this. It does no harm, right?
Yeah, so at the previous meeting, we actually thought about, well, do we just remove everything, or do we mark them as not useful? And what we had heard was we should mark them. But anyway, so let's move on. I'll mark that as an open issue for sure in the document. All right. The map tag. Okay, so this is basically the useful tag. So what this really means is that you're going to something that that is a different user from the previous one. Okay, this is when you do a real redirection, as in you go to somebody else. Now, obviously, there are cases where that different user may happen to be the same guy, like if I forward it to my cell phone and the system doesn't correlate the two. But that's no different from a PBX today or a CO. In the current version of this draft, this is really effectively the map to address, as opposed to the map from address. And this is where we started introducing the AOR concept. When we moved from to to, we decided we wanted to mark the previous entry. So in other words, I see Adriel frowning. So I'll explain this a little bit more. So I call you, Adriel. In an earlier version of this draft, the entry that was marked with map was your address, even if you called for it to Mary. Okay. Now, in the current version of the draft, you would be marked with AOR, and then Mary would be marked with map, and probably eventually with AOR as well when it goes to her proxy. But that's what we have today in the draft. Now, there is some issue with this, actually, in the fact that if the algorithm you're talking about is actually looking from the map from number, like, for example, again, a voicemail system or anything that that's kind of using a diversion header type thing, they're actually looking for the map from. So in the current logic in the draft, which if we put the procedures like we talked about earlier, you would have to go and look back for the entry before that, which I personally think is not actually really that great. So one thing we may want to consider is actually do the map from and the map to as tags if we want to solve this problem. So I don't know if anybody has any opinion on this, what we think we should be doing, or we should just review this and the AOR issue at the same time.
Keith Drage. I just wanted to seek some further clarification about what you were doing here. So basically, under the current diversion, basically the diversion point, mm-hmm. It inserts the old request URI and also the new one as entry 1 and entry 2, correct?
It depends if the previous one was already there.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, it's not there, so you insert it and also the new one.
On the first leg, right?
Yes.
On the first leg,
on
in general, yes, correct.
Where you
correct.
Do a diversion.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
Right, so what you're proposing here is that in the draft at the moment, you put MP on
the second one.
The second one. And the alternative is that you put tags on both 1 and 2, correct?
Well, you probably want a different name for it, but yeah. Especially if we don't do AOR, then I think we need to figure out something to figure out that there was a... Basically, you want to figure out when there was a change of user, right? And what I'm pointing out is if you only mark the second one, and it may be more difficult to find the previous one, especially if there's intermediary proxies that just do automatic forwarding, you know. So that's basically the point.
Hadriel Kaplan, so I'm confused. Isn't it always the one before the MP, or you think it could have... what we would currently be looking for as the map from is not always the entry before the MP? It could have been 3 entries before, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, you could have, just proxies that are statically used to just route, And those things get marked with history info. In theory, get marked with history info, and I would say probably most implementations don't do that. But a proxy that just basically goes to the next proxy all the time, because it's some sort of aggregator, for example.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I just don't know who would know that which entry was the mapped from.
It's the one that changes to the map too, right?
Yeah,
that,
but
that's the
so
guy.
Let's say I get it and I'm now redirecting, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm adding one, I'm going to add the map to tag.
Yeah.
How do I know which one of the previous ones I need to set as mapped from?
The case that I'm more worried about, to be honest, is the case where some stupid proxy, like in the middle, decides to remove an entry because it doesn't have a tag. Oh, it doesn't have a tag. Must be bad, right? Or
yeah,
it has a route. It has a route tag actually, which is the fluff, right?
Yeah.
So, oh, I'm gonna remove it, right? But especially if it's not mark AOR, which you would not.
No,
remove,
no, no.
Right?
I'm with you on the use on the need. I just don't understand how it's physically possible for anybody to know which one of those ones was the mapped from.
It's the guy that puts the map to, basically.
How does he know? If it's not the entry right before the one he's going to map to, how does he know which entry of the previous list of 12 was the map from?
I think it's always going to be the one before. I mean.
But then it is always the one before. It's not the one that's 3 before or 4 before. That was my question in the beginning. Is it always the one before, in which case
right.
we don't need a tag because it's just the one before? Or, you know, I don't mind having a tag,
right.
but I'm just asking, is it always the one before? Is it actually the one
before?
It's
always the one
before
from the point of view of that guy. The problem is if somebody else after that decides to remove it. That's the thing we're trying to prevent.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, you just want
right.
a tag just to make sure nobody deletes
it. A tag that says this is important. don't,
okay.
don't, you know, dick around with it. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a suggestion. I mean, we could just say, well, you know, if you follow the spec anyways, you're not going to remove anything.
Right. Right.
But
okay.
I mean,
I'm with you. Yeah. Okay. I think that I think it's a good idea to have explicit tagging if it's correct explicit
right.
tagging. Absolutely.
I think especially if we don't do the AOR, then the likelihood that people start removing stuff that don't have any indication at all are pretty high.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yes. Okay. All right. So I'll mark that as an open issue as well, and I'll say it's kind of pending on the AOR discussion. Yeah.
Keith Strage here.
Yep.
I'm not sure it actually helps you an awful lot. If you've got multiple diversions, you're effectively going to end up with double tagging, aren't you? So it's going to be map from for one diversion and map to for the other diversion.
Yeah, that's exactly
so,
what. Yeah.
But I mean, you're already going to have to do. I mean, if you look at the parameters, for the reason parameter, you've got to look at one of the values and work out that it applies to this diversion anyway at the moment. Then those aren't. That rule is not going to change under the new procedures. If you've got the voicemail URI, it's actually going to be tagged against a different header, a different URI rather, and you've still got to work out which one it applies to. So I don't really think map from or map to helps you in doing that over and above just saying this is the one that relates to a particular diversion. So I don't think you gain any benefit by tagging two URIs instead of just tagging one.
Well, right. So I would agree that the to one is not as useful as the from one. But actually, there was one use case.
Yeah,
I think it was the free phone thing.
Correct.
Which I still don't understand. But
that is the use case for it. But the reason he wants to tag both is just so that some evil middlebox doesn't accidentally delete that one, I think. Right.
Right.
That's what your point was.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
It's almost like a not fluff tag now.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
So this whole thing, you're trying to distinguish the MP from or to from the fluff. That's basically the core problem here. That was Colin's problem at the beginning. That maybe that should be clearer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Keith Strage again. Well, I mean, maybe my problem is that I'm not sure it works to do what you're trying to do unless you actually end up numbering the tags, and I don't particularly want to go in that direction.
What do you mean numbering the tag?
Well, numbering the map from. So you can correlate the map from to the map to. Unless you know the map from relates and the map to both relate to diversion 5, I suspect you end up with problems, but I'd have to think it through.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what you're trying to do. I think you're basically, typical algorithm would be find the last from, map from. That would be the typical algorithm that maps to a diversion header scenario, or the first one, actually, depending what you're trying to do. So a voicemail system, for example, will actually look at the first one, typically. And if it doesn't have a good if you can't find one, take the last one, right?
Yeah, just to be clear, sorry, this is Real Captain. We're actually saying it would literally be a different tag name, mapped from and mapped to, not like both called MP. I mean, they would effectively be separated in almost like redirecting versus redirection number, right? Nice.
That's exactly what it would be.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it would be.
If people are removed, Keith Strage again, if people have removed tags, How do I know that map from relates to diversion 4 rather than diversion 5?
No, people don't remove tags. People don't remove tags, but they may remove entries. That's the problem.
If you removed an entry plus the URI, how do I know that the map from that I've got there is the one that relates to diversion 4 and not just diversion 5 that happens to have been removed?
But this is basically exactly the same thing as an ISDN thing. If you start removing entries, then you better have good logic to handle that in your application, and people do actually. You know.
This is Mary again. You do know if entries have been removed because of the indexing, so you can see that, and then you know have the right logic in there to handle that case.
Right. Right. You do have the index. Actually, that's a very good point. That will tell you that things were removed. Yeah.
You've got 12 minutes now.
All right. Okay. So this one, I think we're. I think we're leaning towards the mapping bow. So
you have to point to these things.
Yeah. This is all right. For retrieving different targets, but yeah. So this is the point. Actually, this one is going to be really fast because this is exactly what Colin and others are mentioned at the beginning. So we need to clarify the algorithms for different applications. So this is. I don't think we need to spend that much time on it. Now, if you have a specific application that we think we need to talk about, we can look at that. All right, so let's move to slide 5, privacy. I actually don't think this is really an issue. Depending on how you read 3323 was really written with a two-party type model, you know, calling user, called user. And because of that, some of the wording was a little bit awkward. It's a little bit awkward when you try to read it. You know, it doesn't really talk about you know if it's something that's an identity of something in the middle of a call. So anyway, I believe we've clarified the text to make that very clear that privacy applies to entries as opposed to messages, for example. So I don't think we want people to look at it if you think we missed something, but I think right now this is pretty good. Whoops. Can you go to the slide that has the thing we want to do this meeting? Yeah. All right. So let's do the second one first, actually. So the target URI draft, the use case scenarios, do we prefer to have this separate or do we want it in the document? I think the authors are kind of open to either approach.
So I think we should probably work on it together in one document. And if you decide to split it. I mean, right now the target URI draft is really dependent on what's going to come out of 4244bis, right? So, I mean, you know, trying to have two documents and reference it all the time, whenever it changes, it's a real pain. So I'd rather just work on it in the same document, and if you want to split it, you can split it later.
Right.
If that's cool.
Right. You know. So from the point of view of the editors, it's a pain in the butt to actually try to synchronize a second one with the first one.
I mean, all of us working together. It's on both documents anyways.
Yeah, this is Adriel. Yeah, as I said, when I read this I read 42...
For the audio stream, that was Sheeta Schubert at the microphone.
Oh, sorry. as I said at the beginning, when I read the 4244bis, I was very confused until I went back and read the target URI again because it had changed the semantics of what the original target URI said. Mm-hmm. And so that was useful, but to Keith's point, all the use cases in here as normative text it's not related to have you implemented history info, really. It's a use case on the UAS side only. How do you actually treat these things, right? Are you talking use case or are you talking about the application's use of it?
Well, so the use case right now is the target URI.
Yes.
Which actually, really, when you really dig down into it, it's like four or five different use cases. Five different use cases, free phone, the parameter passing of the first or the last one, blah, blah, blah. So the proposal, if we would do this, would be to bring those into the document in the appendix that has all the other ones that are currently in the document, like the voicemail and the contact center. So that's one proposal.
As a point of clarification, can an appendix have normative text?
Sorry?
As a point of clarification, can an appendix have normative text?
That's right now there's no normative text. I mean, if there's normative parts, I think it'll be in the body of the document.
Okay.
You know. We can sort out these details later. I just want to know, do we have one document or two?
It's bad style.
Or many.
Definitely.
So I think what I'm hearing from Shida is he's arguing in favor of putting those use cases, the really high runners, in the document. And, you know, if somebody else comes with something else later, that could be a separate document. So anybody has a diverging opinion that think it should really be separate?
Keith Drage, I think to a certain extent you can do some of that later. There's no reason why you can't move them forward in the same document at the moment.
And
to answer Adriel's question, I mean, basically the distinction between normative and informative text is whether you use RFC 2119 language or not.
Right.
It doesn't really matter where it is in the document. So.
Right.
I agree that you need to make clear whether you're being normative or informative. And
yes.
And ideally keep them separate in separate sections.
Right, which is what we've done today with the ones that are already in there. We put them in an appendix to make that very clear.
But I think, I mean, basically, use cases and applications are effectively, well, they're not the same thing, but they exist on a one-to-one basis. The use case is basically only affects the protocol in how do I actually decide what to render at the receiving entity. So, I mean, I think, you know, use case versus application, they basically, they can be grouped together like that and be, you know, one for one. What else was I going to say? I do want to make sure that we do still agree on compatibility. And I am a bit worried that just saying, let's revise 4244 bis is very open-ended, which is effectively all we're saying on that slide. So what I would like to see established is, what are we revising it to do? Apart from
right.
the target URI and fixing known interoperability bugs.
Right. So the proposal would be to limit this to the target URI is the only thing we would be adding over what's in there today. Yes. That I would actually say that would be the scope for now.
Except that, you know, Keith Drage again, adding algorithms for diversion in terms of what you actually want to find out at the end for what you might believe is the existing use cases of 424bis, that's
mm-hmm.
not there at the moment, as Cullen keeps saying. Where have we gone?
Well, they're there in the example, but not in the procedure. So I think we need to put the procedure.
So maybe at some point, I think you need a listing of these are the use cases we are covering in the existing version.
Okay. So what I would propose is that the use case that we would be are exactly the one that are in either target URI or history info today. Okay, so there's a few at the end in the appendix and history info, and we would be adding whatever normative procedures that we need for that. That would be my proposal. And we would do it in a way that we separated it out properly in the document to distinguish the normative versus the use case, so that in a later date, if we decide to offload it off in a separate document, it's easy for the editors. That would be my proposal. If people are okay with this, I would like this to be the way forward.
We are cutting the line after Hadriel if he wants to talk.
Okay, so I asked earlier, Dean Willis here, I asked earlier about the specific inclusion of user agent client to user agent server parameter passing as being in scope. The one application that we've had brought forward recently that seems to require that is Alan Johnston's work on call control UUI. I would argue that if we cannot meet the use cases raised by that draft using this infrastructure, that this infrastructure doesn't meet the requirements of our charter goal. So either we can do what we need to do for CCUUI with history info, or we need to find a different way to get our charter goal of passing the target parameters to the user agent server.
Mm-hmm. So I can answer that. I think the answer is it would work, but I really don't think that the group has a consensus that that's the way we're going to do it.
Then history info is useless for meeting that goal.
No, Dean, get back. The group has not agreed, okay, that UUI will be due with parameters. I mean, if the group decides that, yeah, sure, history info will work. But if the group has not agreed that they use parameter passing, I mean, that's your favorite option. It's not necessarily the group. But yes, if the group decides that, this will work. Absolutely. So it does satisfy your need. But, you know, this is not for It has nothing to do with history info to decide if that's the proper mechanism for passing UUI. And I actually don't really have a preference, but it will work, absolutely. Okay? All right.
Adriel Kaplan, the only other topic that you haven't covered is the one more that we brought up on the mailing list was the tell URI problem, where because you have escaped headers that you're adding into these entries, you can't have an escaped header in a tell URI. So we are you planning to resolve that as part of the BIS document, or is that something
to solve the tell URI problem?
The problem of adding escaped headers.
Yeah,
into
that was not really my goal. but we invite contributions on it, actually. Maybe, but I think it would be very hard because there's a lot of things in SIP in general that really makes it fairly difficult to use tell URI properly.
Absolutely.
And which kind of explain why people don't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would personally think it should be out of scope. But
okay, that's the answer I was looking for. Thank you.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah, we're not gonna be taking Hans because he's very premature.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, keep on discussing on the list and let's move forward.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.